The following content contains adult subject matter, including sensitive material, and is intended for adult consumption only. It may not be suitable for all audiences. Therefore, discretion is advised.
You guys, hello. I'm trying to do this thing. I thought it'd be fun. Wasn't that fun? Hi. How's everybody doing? We're breaking down. I'm breaking down a lot less lately, though. But I'll still commit to breaking down for the show. I'll be in breakdown once a month, maybe. I don't know. I've been good, so we might have to change the name of the show. Eek, Healing with Ali Culbert? No, Jews love to break down. I'm breaking down. Today on the show, it was really one of my favorite episodes yet. We have Cameron Esposito, and we talk theology, and she just like takes me through her life in the most beautiful, interesting way. And this conversation really nourished my soul. Sorry, I'm earnest. It's the earnest train. Before 2024 comes around, I'm being sincere. I loved it. And I think you will too. Follow the show on Spotify for video. Thanks for listening, you guys. Enjoy the episode.
I think that actually my style is more Harry Styles Bowie than like...
Oh, I love Harry Styles.
I also will say thank you to that man for giving me contemporary permission to be myself. Because otherwise, you know, for a youngster like you, if I say Bowie...
I still get the Bowie reference.
You get it, but
it's
not...
But I'm not as connected.
Yeah, you're not like, you know, it's like constantly in the For You page.
Right. I mean... Don't we have such an interesting relationship with style as queer people?
Your glasses are amazing.
Wow, thank you.
And it feels on, that wasn't a subject change. It was as an example of queer style.
Thank
your glasses.
You. Thank you. I feel that like it's taking me years and I'm not close. Maybe I'm closer to close the gap between how I want to look and feel. Like I can't quite get there.
It's really hard because, so for me, and this isn't true for all queer people, but like gender conforming stuff is not going to be it, right? Like I even actually recently to the Barbie movie, I wore a...
Barbie, it's our thing.
I wore a Jean-Paul Gaultier like t-shirt printed mini dress. And to the Eras tour, I wore a bodycon dress.
Wow.
So we're experimenting. But again, wearing dresses like how...
Harry Styles might.
Yeah. Or like Kurt Cobain.
Right.
It's hard. Because if you're gender nonconforming, you're grabbing from all over the place. You can't just like walk into the women's department.
I feel like I have an instinct. Like I sometimes will think like when I paint my nails that I want to like look like how Pete Davidson looks when he paints his nails.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, no, that's not how people are going to experience you. People are going to experience you as a tiny brunette who painted her nails.
I see you, baby. You know what? You know what? I clocked those nails. I paint my toes. I get manicures.
Uh-huh.
Where I get my toes painted. And you know what?
What?
I love it. I fucking love it. You look great in those nails.
Thank you.
You know what?
I
understand what you're saying.
It's interesting how, like, I feel something going on.
Yeah.
Or it's like, this is like growing up. I wore anything like more masculine, I was so worried that I was going to like out myself.
Right.
But everyone was like, you're a tiny girl. Like, you in this flannel, we don't read you as gay. But I felt so gay inside that I was like, this is so dykey.
I hear you. I mean, even when we hugged, you said you're so much smaller than I thought. It's because I have big boy energy.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
But you're still taller than me.
I'm little though. I have giant Crocs on. Well, you have giant Uggs on. Never mind. I am bigger than you.
Yeah.
Oh, your voice. You have a gay voice.
What's a gay voice?
Something you're gifted with. Like, do you hear in your own voice like a little gravel?
Yeah, but if I sound like too gay, I want to like stamp it out.
Oh, really?
Or if like a girl I'm talking to will say like, you sound so bro-y, then I'm like, get so really self-conscious.
Do you want to do like a play? I'm that person.
Yeah.
I want to know how it goes. Like, what's your voice doing when it's called out? Like, hey, like this is the phone. It's like me. I'm on the phone. Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah. Well, honestly, I'm pretty worried about my cat.
Oh, what's going on with your cat?
She.
You know, I love your cat.
She left.
She left. Where'd she go?
I don't know. But.
I'm so upset I was roped into this.
But back to you.
Yeah.
How's your day going? I'm noticing a little gravel in your voice.
Really? My day's going well. Okay, what I'm feeling in this exercise is that
I thought I was going to be able to do this. I thought it was
going to turn. The cat part.
I thought it was going to turn out different. Well, actually, you know what?
I thought you'd go kind of mundane and let me kind of shine.
No, I don't.
But you were like, something happened to my cat. And I was like, wow, that's a weird.
Well, I thought maybe, honestly, I thought maybe you'd go.
Tell me what you really think about this.
I thought you'd go protective.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Do you want to do the play with me?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So but, I'll be straight in this?
Or like, you're the cat person.
Hi.
You're the cat person from the story,
this
cat
is
person.
Every okay. girl I talk to. Hi.
Hey.
It's such a happy day in my neighborhood right now, but I just lost my cat.
Oh, do you need help
with
anything?
My cat?
Yeah, like, do you need help looking for her? Honestly, are you hungry? I'll send something.
Yeah, please.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. I actually already memorized your favorite restaurants, so don't even tell me what you need. It's on the way. It's actually already,
wow.
Just now.
It's like a smooth control thing, I'm feeling.
Absolutely.
It's actually just like a neurotic control impulse.
Absolutely.
To not modulate.
Yeah, it's codependency.
So that people, yeah, exactly. That gay voice is your panic. It's it's your anxious attachment style. That's gay voice. Yeah, that might be what it is.
Yeah.
Because I also feel like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I couldn't dirty talk without being leaning really hard into that.
Were we? Can I ask you a question?
You can ask me.
Was that dirty talk?
No.
Okay, all right.
No, that was it.
Yeah. Because I don't know what each individual person's into.
Yeah. I'm not saying that was dirty talk to me.
Right.
I just was in reflecting on how I use my voice with women. And I want to sound, I just want to be more, I'm confused about my gender, honestly.
Well, you came
morning.
To the right place because I couldn't relate more.
Yeah. I just like, I want to be more masculine.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, but look at me. I'm also not trans. I don't feel trans. I'm not like, I'm a man. So then that's an interesting cross section. I'm like, well, what a, and then like, I'll have this thing when I'm dating women where like, because I'm small, I want to feel like I can like protect them and be bigger. But then I'm also like, I can't imagine myself bigger and like taller.
Yeah. Look, hey, I think something that I have always wished for is like a finish line. Where once I passed that in terms of my gender, my self-understanding, my expression, that everybody would like flip those flags and be like, you did it. You know, or there's like one of those tapes that you run through and everybody goes, we get what you are.
Complete.
And then I'm also part of that group going, I get what I am. And we all hoist me up on my, I'm on my own shoulders saying, I did it. I already finally figured it out.
Get up here, buddy.
But that's not been the case for me.
Yeah.
You know, I find that like, I've looked a lot of different ways at a lot of different times, and I like myself a lot more right now than I think I ever have. And part of it is, this is so wild, I am more muscular than I've ever been, or like at least since I was like a jock in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it has allowed me to feel like I can be more feminine. Isn't that interesting?
How do you mean?
Well, like I have kind of giant biceps right now.
Okay.
And so I feel like I have like less to prove in my like hair.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So I'm like growing my hair out because
it gives you added security in that space.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Through hot yoga.
Through hot yoga?
Mm-hmm.
You're getting ripped through hot yoga?
I think I am, yeah.
Is it a lot of core?
It is a lot of core. It's also like, well, I take the classes.
The class?
No, I'll tell you what I mean by that.
Okay.
So there are like hot yoga studios that also offer like, do you want to lift weights, but it's hot? Do you want to punch the air? And I always stand in the front row. I look myself in my eyes. I go, fuck you. And then I work out so hard. Everybody in the class is really worried about it. My sisters recently came with me to classes. And I do, while I'm doing it, I do a lot of, sometimes they'll instruct you to do lion's breath, which is this. You go,
oh.
But I do that without being instructed to do that while making eye contact with myself and lifting weights in a hot room. I find it helps with my bipolar disorder.
To just do lion's breath?
To just work out to a degree that is too much. Mm. Right on the edge.
What is it doing for bipolar?
It like expresses some of the energy that I have previously expressed making bad choices.
Right. Right. It's a great outlet.
Yeah. It just gets some of the stuff out so I don't need to have so many wacky adventures.
What were some of your wacky adventures? You know all about it.
You remember? What? You remember when I joined the circus, but actually for real? When I tried to become a priest.
You tried to become a priest?
Of course. Of course.
Wait, what? When was that?
Yeah, well, during the pandemic.
As one does.
Yeah.
During the pandemic?
Yeah, so pretty recently.
Recently?
Yeah.
You were called to join the priesthood?
Well, one thing I didn't know at the time.
Are there female priests?
If you're not Catholic, yeah.
Right.
I think it's usually called like a different thing. Minister. Right. Or like, but some of them are called priests.
And you were raised Catholic, right?
I was, yeah.
That's rough, right?
Boy, howdy is a phrase I've never said before until just now. Yeah, it was really
boy, howdy with Cameron Esposito.
You know what? I was going to say, I wish I hadn't said that, but that's not true.
Yeah.
I wish I'd said that.
Mm.
And I did.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, no, Catholicism is.
Did you stay consistent with your Catholicism to the point that you're pursuing the priesthood a few years ago, or did you have your relationship with religion oscillating?
I wasn't pursuing becoming a Catholic priest. There was a period in college where I thought, if the Pope just met me,
then
this whole policy out the window. I have felt a spiritual calling multiple times in my life. I didn't know at the time. Religious fervor is actually a symptom of bipolar disorder.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Okay, so, but what is that? But do you feel like that was just a symptom of?
It's like impossible to, I can't, you can't, for me, not you, I can't separate out like what things are inherently my personality, because it's brain chemistry.
Yeah.
So I'm always going to be in that experience of life.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know if that even means that those experiences weren't real, for instance.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I don't know if this is cobbled together or contrived or just an authentic part of me. But
and probably all of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but what is coming up for you that you're saying, I want to be a priest?
Priesthood?
Yeah. What is that?
I think what was coming up was, well, first of all, there is a part of it that is so cute. If I could have some tenderness toward myself, and mm-hmm. I do.
Let's play that music.
Yeah, kick it in, please. During the pandemic, our job didn't exist.
Right.
And I think I was freaking out, but I wasn't perceiving that I was freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
I just was like, well, what's the career pivot? Like, what's the most logical?
You found it. What's the most logical one?
Like, so sweet, because all I could think of, like, after having done stand-up, for like 20 years, the only thing I could think of was like, I want to be on like an elevated platform in front of people and tell them my views on things while they face me and listen. Like, I essentially could only think of the same job, you know, like being a priest, being a stand-up comic, that's not,
going for the laugh, but other than that.
Yeah, you're not going for the laugh, but you are like bringing people together or alienating them. whatever you choose to do that. You're like allowing people some respite from their own minds and from their like terrible day jobs or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Wine is often involved. These are like very similar jobs.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, and you have things you're like, I want to, you know, write a sermon about this.
It's the same stuff I want to do. Well, I think what I wanted to do.
It's just your bits reshaped.
Yeah. Number one. Exactly. It's like I take out all the punchlines, which actually is debatable that I even have punchlines to begin with, according to some men on the internet. I eventually put this down because I realized the whole reason I was trying to pursue this endeavor was like for revenge.
On?
Like the Catholic Church and stuff.
Oh.
you know, then I'd be like so good at this job that they'd feel humiliated.
That's the debate, really?
I think so, yeah. It wasn't conscious.
Because the Catholic, were you traumatized by religion
yes,
growing up?
Yeah, totally.
Were you a church going kid?
Yes, I was, yeah.
And where were you raised?
I was raised outside Chicago.
Okay.
And I was into it. Like, I was into, not like, I didn't ever think like Jesus was like a physical man who like died and then he came back in his body that was like, I thought it was all allegory, even from when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
But I just thought that the idea of anything being able to bring us together was quite beautiful. And mm-hmm. I thought that there was a lot of wisdom in the Bible. And what I'm saying is, when I say I was into it, I mean like I was an altar server, which is where you're like a priest assistant when I was a kid.
Are they swinging the...
Yeah, they can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
the
always
incense
looked fun.
Thing, or you're yeah. carrying the cross into church. All very like... important things,
right?
You know,
right?
And then when I was in college, I was a Eucharistic minister, which is like where you give the host to people, and I also
the wafer, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I also went to daily mass, and I lived in Rome for a while because I was a theology major. Also, I want you to know I was popular. You know what I mean?
Where did you go to college?
I went to Boston College. Somehow this
okay.
was all fine.
Catholic school.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I know, it's a lot to dig in.
So, and what is your relationship with your sexuality like growing up, like adolescent?
I just didn't know gay people were real.
Yeah.
I know I asked you this when you were on my podcast.
Yeah.
How old are you?
30.
Yeah. So like, I'm 42. And I think that I think it sounds wild, but it is true that growing up, I literally, there were no... gay people that I could see, like no queer people, no, zero.
I felt
actually,
that way.
Actually, zero.
10 years after you, I felt that way.
Yeah.
So like, I can only imagine.
Yeah. Like even in stand-up, I mean like, because the internet wasn't such a thing, like I didn't know about Fortune Feimster working in another city and like being out. I hadn't heard of Leah Delaria because she wasn't yet on Orange is the New Black, so I didn't know she'd been working for a long time. Wanda Sykes, Allen, like, they weren't out. Tig, I only knew from, like, the Sarah Silverman program. So, like, there weren't even people that were openly talking about being gay in stand-up.
Right.
So then, like, I didn't grow up with people that were out and queer that I could see on TV. Then I started a job where I didn't know that there are people who are out and queer. So it was brutal. Like my sexuality stuff was like finding it. I felt like I was like an explorer, but not in the way where I was colonizing anybody, but more in the way where like I had no map of where I was going.
Like a lost pirate or something.
Yeah, like a lost pirate, but like one of the good ones.
Yeah. And so, but are you sensing like,
no.
I don't.
I just kissed a woman when I was actually on a Catholic trip to a leper colony in Kingston, Jamaica.
How old are you?
19.
That's your first time kissing a woman?
Well, first we went to a 3-day silent retreat with each other, which, by the way, the fucking lesbian tension, the eye contact.
Every lesbian date
so
is
so much hair playing, you know, twirling of one another's hair. Then we came back, and the night that we got back to campus is the first time we kissed.
Okay, how does that happen? Are you nervous about that happening?
I had no idea it was going to happen because I went to some parties with my two boyfriends. I had two boyfriends, and I went to see them, and then she came with me to the parties, and I also kissed them, so it was kind of an odd night.
So during the silent retreat portion, though.
Yeah.
When
oh, I didn't know what was going on. I knew I was like losing my mind. Like I knew I was like, yeah. I mean, I clearly was like
freaking out, like getting wet during this.
Yeah,
but thinking
like, had, like
I'm gonna go
boner.
Home to my boyfriend.
We don't talk enough about the fact that like the crotch region,
yeah,
lights right up. You know,
oh,
that,
yeah.
You're not confused,
right?
We don't talk enough about
just
that
because there's no boner
as a culture. Yeah, like I call it a boner.
I call it a boner too.
We both call it a boner.
I always say I'm rock hard.
That's fucking amazing.
I always reference my cock.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know how to not.
Because we don't even talk about...
I like the language around it. Like, I'm into so the hard for too. You. Like, things like that.
Yeah.
Me, I just, the whole episode, I try to dirty talk with you. I just keep, like, kind of breadcrumbing you.
No, but...
So, yeah, you're right. It is an immediate.
Yeah. But nobody talks about that.
But you're not thinking this might mean something about me. You're thinking this is... You're not considering
it. Somehow, no. And I know that doesn't make sense.
I know. I'm always fascinated.
Like, I want that to make sense, too, but... I didn't know. Well, and I had always been like, I'd always had like girls. I mean, I started having boyfriends when I was 15. And so I like, or actually even earlier than that was like when I was in eighth grade, you know,
right.
My first boyfriend of 3 days, obviously very important relationship.
Intense.
But yeah, so like I'd had guys around and then like I would read magazines about like what I was supposed to feel in my body and I didn't feel anything. And then I like loved my best friends, but nobody talked about like the body I have, like what it's supposed to feel like.
Right.
It was all like sex tips.
Like male pleasure.
It was all like suck on an ice cube and then give him a cold one.
Right.
It's a lot of like blowjob instruction.
All about the blowjob.
Very blowjob heavy.
But so before.
Which I also was not giving. So I was just reading that and then. Dragging that right to the trash and then emptying the trash.
Right.
Because that was useless to me.
So, but before you're 19.
Yeah.
You have crushes on your friends, you're saying.
Yeah.
And that you're still not making meaning of. Or you only know their crushes in retrospect.
Yeah.
But were you in pain at that time? Because I remember.
Emotional pain?
Yes.
Well, again,
I
it's
was
like
broken the, over that.
Well, what did you know that at the time?
Yes. I was in love. I was like, I want. This person so bad. I had such deep lesbian
longing.
We were
like, I'm in love with this person.
Yeah.
So for me, it was like, I have a song with this person that I'm going to request at the school dance. Oh. Our song.
Yeah.
But also, I'm going to dance with my boyfriend. And after my boyfriend kisses me, I need to eat 12 bowls of cereal. But that's probably normal.
To clear out the taste.
Just to like self-soothe. You know.
Just a common method of self-soothing.
Just a common.
12 bowls of Lucky Charms. I totally get that. That's relatable.
It was so intense. Oh.
Ah, but yeah. So, okay, but saying like I'm going to put this song on and then and then having to go to him, to me,
I know.
It would split me open. It's probably why I got Crohn's disease. My intestines turned inside out.
I wasn't doing well.
Yeah.
But even when I first started dating my first girlfriend, like, I still kind of dated men for a while because it wasn't, you weren't allowed to really be out at BC. You could be like kicked out of school.
You could be kicked out of school?
It was not covered in their non-discrimination policy at the time. So also that was true for faculty.
That is insane.
I know. It's insane.
Is it? It's not that way now.
It changed after I graduated, although I have checked in since to be like, how is it for students currently?
Yeah.
And I heard that like the environment isn't, you know, up to 2023 cultural standards that I would hope for a university that is also supplying medical care and including mental health care. You know, universities are for-profit ventures, but they're also like primary health care providers for their students.
Right.
And so
they're on
anyway,
a Florida program.
Yeah. It's so, I actually won an award this year. BC gave me an award, an arts award.
Wow.
And I wasn't sure what I was going to accept.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to it.
You went to BC?
I went to BC and I received this award. My best friend, who also went to BC and also high school with me in grade school. We've been friends since we were like 9 years old.
Okay.
She came with me and she knew what I was going to do. I think the people who gave me the award also knew what I was going to do. But I gave like a sort of a lovely but also scorched earth speech.
Wow.
That the president of the university did not come to, I think because also, again, I think they knew.
Is it online?
Yeah, it's somewhere. I also posted like an excerpt of it on my Instagram, but like.
Oh, wow. And does any faculty members come up to you after and say, and acknowledge that?
So I'm still really close friends with the head of the theology department at BC. And so he's the person who presented me with the award.
Yeah.
And it meant a lot to me to get it. Like when I was an undergrad, Amy Poehler got this award.
Oh, wow.
And so I got to go to that and be like, oh my God. Honestly, she was the coolest. She was so like funny and natural and amazing. She was on SNL at the time. I was like so jazzed.
Yeah.
So it was a big deal to me to get the award. But yeah, I did tell them that they had caused me irreparable harm and were continuing to harm their students.
How do you not say that?
I mean, I don't know, but I it was.
It's probably some of the motivation to go and accept the award, if not.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, yeah, sure. No, you fly me there.
I'm going to become a priest.
I'll insult you in your face. Yeah. 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 At the end, I said, and by the way, I've been a priest this whole time. And I tore off my stand-up comic clothes, and underneath, I was just wearing vestments. That's the word for the.
Oh, good. So then from after that, mm-hmm. how long is it before you start dating women?
So I was dating my first girlfriend, but it was like a huge thing. It was, you know, I was closeted.
Yeah.
And then.
So it's in secret.
Super secret. Yeah.
Okay.
My roommates just thought I was.
Is it that girl?
Hmm. Yeah. First she, we did it for like 4 years.
Oh, you in yeah. the whole year, all those years are in secret?
Yeah. I know. It was a bad time.
Because of you or because of her?
Me. We were out to her friends.
What are
not
you,
my friends.
What are you worried about? Hell at that time?
Well, I was worried about hell, but also I had a bad experience coming out to a friend who, like, stopped talking to me. So I was, and my parents were really upset. So, because they found a box that she had sprayed with her perfume and mailed to me. It's, you know, it's like, it was rough.
I don't know how people deal with parents that are so resistant to their children being who they are.
Well, you know, here's what I'll say. I mean, they've changed so much. It's completely a non-issue slash they're like actual allies at this point.
Oh, wow.
I have like actual PTSD from this experience that I take medication for.
The coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really bad.
You didn't speak with them for a while?
I spoke with them, but they were really upset as we were speaking for like a lot of years. Yeah, it was super hard.
Where do you go with that? You're confiding in your friends? Or?
No. The stage.
The stage.
Yeah.
You're in stand-up at that point in time.
Well, I started doing improv in college, right? And then. Yeah.
The
I started
stage.
Doing stand-up.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, as a way to process some of this,
mm-hmm.
because I didn't really know. I didn't yet have, like, a group of friends. I was still in this, like, religious vortex. So I didn't have, like, a group of friends that were just like, we don't give a fuck about this. Nor did I not give a fuck about it. I also was like.
Gave a huge fuck.
I hate this about myself. Everybody agreed. We all shook hands and said that we hated it.
That is so painful.
I know. Yeah. So I will say stand up for sure. Because people talk about it as therapy and that really bothers me. I've been in therapy for a long time. I don't think of stand up as therapy, but I do think that it like was an artistic expression of things that I was working out. Like, it's like trying to tell the truth. Like, that's what I think stand-up is. It's telling the truth. But trying to tell the truth when the truth isn't even apparent to you takes years. And that's true for every comic. Like, every comic gets up on stage in, like, the first few years is just talking nonsense. Like, is just talking about shit that, like, doesn't matter or that, like, lacks self-awareness. And it's because there is, like, a message that's trying to get out, but it just is, like, buried under not knowing oneself.
That is so well said.
Really? You think that's true too?
I couldn't agree with that more.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Do you think that's why it takes so long to get good at stand-up?
I do. I think there's a couple things going on with that. One is like anybody does need to like work on cadence, work on like stage presence, work on like joke structure, all of that. But if what you're saying doesn't matter to you, the audience does know. And by the way, people who are saying stuff that doesn't matter to them, they can work forever. Like that, there are comics in clubs across the country as we speak.
Right now.
That are telling jokes about, like, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And, like, that can work for, it can work for a certain audience. But I think that people that we think of as, like, having a message, like, yeah. And the word message also feels loaded. Having, like, an impact, that's actually the right. The people we think of as having, like, a real impact on the art and on culture,
yeah.
They're, like, saying a thing. And, yeah, I think that takes a long time to realize what we're even trying to say.
Right. So what are you talking about in those days?
Oh my God. I'm talking about, like, do you know how your parents, like, are worried you're going to get AIDS, which doesn't even make any sense? And the audience is like,
sure.
No. Is that your experience? You know, like, they're, like, genuinely worried. Right. My niche is the audience is a little worried for me.
I feel it. Yeah. That's so funny. I heard you say recently on a podcast, and this, like, kind of freaked me out because I said I don't do this, where you were like, I make sure I say something interpersonally before I say it on stage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, yeah. fuck.
Yeah.
Because for a moment, I thought I was being like, I was like, fuck it. I'm going to be brave. I'm risky these days. And I was like, well, that's a little misguided, actually. Maybe you should talk to your sister for a moment.
You know, I mean, it took me a really long time to come up with that rule for myself.
Yeah.
And the reason I have that rule is because I wrote an hour of material about my experience with sexual assault as a survivor. Mm-hmm. And it's called Rape Jokes, which I was so happy about because I was like, I want to be the first. If somebody looks up rape jokes, I want to be the first Google result, not like some dumb article about like how like cis dude comics who've never experienced it are whatever. It was a different time. It was like 2016. This was a big deal at the time. But I invited a friend of mine and she came to the show. And then afterwards she was like, I did not know you'd been raped. What? Oh. And I realized that is so weird that I was inviting my friends to listen to me tell a story for 1 hour that I hadn't like said to their face.
Mm.
I was like, this is genuinely odd because as much as I appreciate an audience reaction and as much as I'm trying to like change dialogue, what situation am I putting myself in that my like, the people close to me don't know me.
Yeah, there's something off spiritually there.
Felt like there was something off spiritually there. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like when I was talking to Ron Funches recently on the show about sometimes I'll go on stage because I haven't written enough material about things that are going on and I'll say something that's no longer true to me. Like about like my relationship status. And that'll do a number on me.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Do you have that come up ever?
I did like 6 or 7 hours of, and I used to have a stand-up podcast. Hours and hours and hours of stand-up. Like I have a zillion albums and like, you know, like what all this stuff put out. But I haven't put out anything new since like, I can't remember if it's 2017 or 2018. Because what happened is like, my life got really, really complicated. And I realized that I didn't want to talk about all of it on stage for the first time. Like, I had always been like, the second I know what's going on, I'm going to take it to stage. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, I even have this rule of talking to a friend, but I'm going to take it to stage. But I don't want to do that right now. So for the first time, I am performing on stage with a filter. And I've been doing that for a few years.
Mm.
And it's because I, like, don't totally know what I want to say yet or how much I want to share. But it is very uncomfortable. As somebody who's previously been performing with like no filter, like I'm raw and everything I say is like the truth.
And so what does that filter look like? What does that mean?
Like I don't share everything that's been true in my life. And so sometimes I'm telling a story and it's like a version of the story, but it's not the whole story. And I've never done that before. I'm a whole story guy.
Right.
Until recently.
Oh, and how does it feel for you?
It feels bad. On stage. Off stage, it feels good.
Oh.
Because I think I'm protecting myself a little bit more at a time when I need to be protected. But on stage, it feels like
a lie.
What is this? Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like a lie.
Can they pick it up?
I don't think so. I'm also like crafting an hour right now that feels like a stage show. And like, that feels like a, you know,
sermon.
Yeah. That feels like a sermon. But like, Jesus didn't share large portions of his life, by the way.
Yeah, you're right.
We don't know where he was from like 12 to 33.
That's true.
He's off the grid. I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about.
Do you talk about things in like a one-to-one? Like the stuff that you're saying on stage. Mm-hmm. I know this lying moment that you're talking about, but like in general, the jokes that you're trying to say on stage, are they like, that's the whole story? Or is it like crafted? Like there are comics that are like, on the way to the show tonight, this thing happened. And I have seen them do that bit like 18 times. No. I'm like, that didn't happen on the way to the show.
Well, but
like
that, I don't care about.
Have done that my entire career. I've always like,
oh no, I...
Like, I'm like, this happened 3 months ago on the way to a show. Like, I would never even deviate that much from
Whoa,
the truth.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
That's too much for me. I mean—
I think it's been too much for me.
I mean, I won't say, like, the cheesy, like, the, on the way over here tonight, I've lost that, like, fake veneer.
Think about bringing it back.
Yeah, I know. That feels so contrived.
That is contrived.
That feels so bad and, like— Even, like, I was just at my parents' house or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even that, I'm like, you don't need to say that. I think I used to think I needed to, like, place it, but I can just make an observation without giving them a bullshit story around it.
Right, okay.
I think.
Sure. I mean, what's that like?
Right? Can I just be like, I've been thinking this thing I do with my mom.
So this is what's so funny. I guess that's what I'm saying is I've made the observation, but I've put around it the real story. And I understand why I did that. Think about everything I just said so far. Yeah. It's like so much of my life was secrets.
Yeah. So
that
now
when I got on stage, I was just like, this is what's really going on. You know?
Help me, help me, help me. 911.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, in the early days of doing finding comedy then and coming into yourself, do you feel like you're actually healing through it though? Or it's like—
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, through a million different means. But yeah, I mean, stand up, like for sure, I guess I feel like a tremendous amount of gratitude to the fact that like this art form actually exists. I mean, I will also say it's been one of the pains of my life is stand up because it like in me creates competitiveness and like I'm so driven that I mean you heard me talk about how I work out. I'm like making eye contact with myself, like that's how I do everything, you know. So I'm very driven and very competitive, and one of the downsides of that art for me, because it's such a solo endeavor, like I have a lot of friends who are in bands and they like have their band that travels with them. But you know, I travel by myself, and like, I do think that stand-up has an inherent individualistic nature to it that,
of course,
can be really rough on the psyche over time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, stand-up helped me heal, but also like helped me feel important. And not everybody gets to feel that way. But I think after all of that pain of feeling so like fractured, minimized, and humiliated and demeaned, to have a space to feel like listened to, important,
celebrated
has been like amazing. Ugh. A lot of people who go through that experience, then they just live the rest of their lives and die. You know, like they don't have that other side experience.
Oh, I really feel that. Yeah. I really feel that. Like, because I felt so much of my pain growing up closeted. It was so alienating. I was so alone.
Yeah.
And to go on stage and talk about these things is the most liberating, empowering.
Yeah.
And it like kind of like just takes the air out of it. Like it like punctures it.
Yeah.
Like where I was like, oh my God, this thing. And then you're on stage and it's like, but then it's like you get off stage and you're like, okay, I'm alone again.
Well, and that's abjectly depressing. But like, the thing I'll say is that, yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I've been so personal with my stuff over time, a lot of people will like thank me in an audience. I get a lot of thank yous. And again, that's so unusual I think that's just like such an unusual.
That's incredible.
Situation to be in a job. Like this is my job. I am getting paid to be here. So yeah, I guess that is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Because it is like people, I'm so grateful anytime I see a queer artist speaking their truth. I mean,
Yeah.
I remember finding you in comedy and being like, anything that feels like a mirror mm-hmm. to an it's just so supportive to not feel so alone.
That's so sweet. I love to hear that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When you're writing like 6-7 hours of material.
Yeah.
What is your, you wake up in the morning and you're doing pages? Like, what is your,
no.
what does it look like for you?
Well, so I write on stage. I don't write off stage. What I mean is I like will jot down a set list and my set lists look like
ideas,
two words, like, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Cat escaped, you know, and then I get on stage and I see what I say about it. And then over time I like refine that. And so it is replicated. Like it's not like, and then I never bring that up again. It's more like I build the hour in my mind, doing it in chunks on stage. Eventually, sometimes I write it down, but sometimes I don't even ever write it down.
That's so weird. Wait, so when you say cat escaped,
yeah.
and then you go on stage and you're talking about the cat yeah. escaped, do you have an idea before you of where you're landing it?
No.
So how is it? So you're just that funny?
I think it's just how my brain works. I just have like a brain, like it's like I'm very present and I can think of the...
I do feel like you're profoundly present.
I'm very present. Yes. On
it's
stage,
wildly refreshing.
On stage, I'm very present and yeah. I'm like feeling where I want to go next. And also, again, like it's so wild the things that happen to us and then the skills that those create. So I like dissociate in life. But on stage, that's actually very helpful because there's a part of me that's talking, but there's a part of me that's like zoomed out above me.
I wonder how
this is going to land. And like, that's like, then there's like also a third part that's like, what, did someone just drop something in the room or is someone having like a medical emergency? So there's like a part of me that's like watching the room. There's a part of me that's thinking about what I'm going to say next. And then there's a part of me that's performing. And a lot of that I think is actually, it's for sure like a trauma response that, you know, PTSD or childhood trauma, like all that created in me like an ability to leave my body. That also is like kind of amazing. It helps me write on stage the way that I do, which is
totally
so odd.
Get that.
Really?
Yeah. It's like four people in the car.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
I'm like, I can like look out. There's someone in the back. Like mm-hmm. that is weird, but that makes you good at it.
I think for me, it's made me good at my job. Yeah. So like that's one thing that's true. I also think like bipolar disorder speeds up your thoughts and excitement feeds mania. So I think another thing that's happening is when I'm on stage, I'm having a little mini manic episode.
You're getting high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have a hard time coming down?
I do. It's bad.
What do you do for that?
Well, now I have like this different awareness. I've been experimenting with like, what happens if I do shows earlier, for mm-hmm. instance? Mm-hmm. Like this last summer, I was like, come out, San Francisco. The show's 2
p.m.
at 4 p.m. And they were like, all right. And so and it would go well. But that's one thing. Ending earlier. Another option is just like the awareness helps a lot because I used to drink after shows and I don't drink a lot. I don't mean like a lot, but I mean like two like straight vodkas. Like, and so, I mean, I guess that is a lot, but what I mean is it wasn't like 97 beers. It was like, I was medicating myself. It's like so clear to me now that I was like, it was like, it's like taking like two anti-anxiety medications where I was like,
100%.
I was like depressing the energy so that I could like fully crash because otherwise the energy had like no where to go.
Yeah.
I was like having mania and like crash at the same time or whatever.
And are you, I mean, I found this like, I'll do stand up. I don't have bipolar disorder, but I have a high from stand up. I have a hard time coming down.
Yeah. It's drugs because it's altering the chemistry of your body.
Yeah. Like I'm affected up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
of not, course.
You know, and then I'll come home and maybe I'm dating someone at this time. They'll be like,
so you wake them up. No.
You're not going to believe what happened tonight. They're like, I can't date you anymore. But like, I feel like I want to, that's, I think, why I started, like, spending more time than hanging out after the show.
That's a strategy that I also have tried to do more recently.
Yeah.
Because I used to really be, I'd, like, take off. Because I almost didn't want people to see this.
Yeah.
Okay, so you hang out more. What else do
you do? Well, I was doing the hang out more thing, but then I like being home.
Yeah.
So I usually want to rush home. But then when I was going home and there was someone at home, not anymore, no one's at home. But I remember like my ex was like, you can't kind of crash into the house with this energy. It's midnight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Coming in, I'm like,
yeah,
I'm hungry. It's too much and it's not appropriate.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not appropriate. I mean, the other thing I will say is like, I mean, I'm still experimenting with this, but like something that is comforting is helpful. And so like, I was living in Vancouver for a while and I would watch, like if it was the season, I'd just be like, time for a Hallmark Christmas movie, you know?
That sounds great.
Honestly, like endless TikTok scrolling for a minute. Like I'll allow myself because it's like, listen, bro, like this is rough. You know, go ahead. Go ahead and enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm also not touring right now for the first time ever. I'm making that decision.
Oh,
I'm just
in
LA right now.
That's nice, isn't it?
It feels weird.
It feels weird.
Yeah.
Because you're just in one spot.
Yeah. And also
the distraction of travel.
I don't even mind being in one spot. I think I feel some fear around like if I take my foot off of this pedal, like what will happen next? And actually, I think what will happen next is like, is you will do a new thing and that's exciting. Like I've been replicating.
Mm.
I was in New York a couple months ago and I was playing Joe's Pub.
I remember.
And I was like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, look, Joe's Pub is amazing. And for a long time, it was one of my goals was to play Joe's Pub. And I was there doing those shows. And then I was like walking around Manhattan and I was like, I played Joe's Pub last year. Like I just had this realization that I was like repeating goals, like stand-up goals. I was like, babe, your plane is circling, you know, like get home for a little bit.
But is that just a story you're telling yourself to be hard on yourself that it's circling? Isn't it just like you're enjoying?
What I mean is like, I think I'm so goal-oriented that I don't even realize when I've achieved something.
Oh, totally.
I move the goalpost and I'm on to the next thing.
Mm. Yeah. Do you find that like do you take yourself out of acknowledging or celebrating anything while in the process of something because you don't want to like name it and then lose it and then you actually miss the whole window to?
I think it's more like, and this is so intense, I think it's more like I have not been able to feel positive things for a long time because I think I like have made a lot of my life about chasing external validation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know you're shocked to hear that this is true for a stand-up comic. But like, I think it's just realizing, look, I live in Los Angeles and I've lived here long enough to have been to some fancy parties and to know some fancy people. And here's what I'll say.
Yeah.
It seems to be true that the people who are happy not because of the career achievements that they have made. Because I know plenty of people who like had a massive meteoric rise and who are as big a dickheads and as miserable as they were before that.
Yeah.
And so like, it must be that external stuff doesn't change things. And I have super close friends who have these huge careers and they're happy because they have close friends or they're happy because they like love their kids or they're happy because they have like an interest in art or whatever it is, like not their own art. So anyway, I think I just, yeah, I've been working on my own happiness and less on trying to play Joe's Pub. Love you, Joe's Pub.
I know. I believe that. And then also there's a voice in the back of my head that's like, just do it anyway and see. You know?
No, tell me more.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Like, I think about how, like, this is dark. When I die, no one is going to eulogize me and say, and she had 6 Netflix specials.
Yeah.
And she
made, well, they might.
Would they, though? I think it would be my wife or my children saying,
oh, yeah. You don't think your wife's going to list your Netflix specials?
You know, saying,
honestly,
this is how Allie loved me.
Yeah. Yes.
This is how Allie showed up for the people she loved.
Yes.
Maybe she was funny.
Right.
Not that, and wow, when she did Radio City, no one's going to what's going to come up.
So what I'll say is like, as much as I'm not touring, first of all, I have like a zillion plans for like things I'm trying to sell in LA. So it's not like I like, have fully taken my foot off the gas. It's more that I am focused on what people are like, what who I'm actually impacting directly in my life, but just means that this other like validation piece where I feel like I'm getting this like constant boost and hit, like I'm just giving that up for a moment to try to focus on my eulogy.
Yeah. Yes, totally.
Because for a lot of years, this is so fucked up.
Yeah.
But when I was on a plane with turbulence, I would think, who's going to get the headline? Like sometimes if you're on a plane, there's like other people on the plane who also you recognize.
Totally.
And sometimes I'd be like, oh, it's going to be fucking Cole Sprouse. Like yeah. I'll be in the article, but it's not going to be me. That is a stupid way to live. Like yeah. if you're working on like the headline versus what your wife is going to say at your eulogy, like I'm choosing the wife eulogy part, but for a while I've been stuck in that headline mode.
Well, yeah, because it sounds pretty shiny and exciting. But I think it's fleeting.
I think it might be fleeting.
Someone's framed this really succinctly for me like in the last couple of years that like we have, I think specifically in America, but everywhere humans, this paradigm of be, do, have, wrong. Have you heard this?
What? No.
This idea that like we kind of have this idea flip that if I have this fame,
uh-huh.
or money, then I can uh-huh. finally kind of make this thing, this movie, and then I'll finally be happy.
Yep.
And in truth, once I am whatever that is, once I'm fulfilled, grateful, inspired, joyful, then from that place I can create a film and maybe then I'll have money. And it's like I get to source possibility in how I be instead of kind of clamoring for things to fill me up.
See, Allie, what I've done here is I have turned this podcast into, that was a sermon that you just gave.
I'm a rabbi.
Like that was so beautiful.
Thank you. I really love talking with you.
I love talking with you. I love looking at your rings.
Thanks.
I loved.
You're like, I feel this is like a mirror.
I know. It really is a mirror.
I hope it's a mirror. It's a compliment.
Yeah. Yeah. We look great.
Oh, we look awesome. But
yeah.
Thank you for coming on. I think, yeah, you're just really, your thoughts and your jokes are all wonderful.
Oh, you're such a sweetheart. And now we're friends.
Yeah, we're
friends. And we're the same size with the same outfit on.
Yeah.